Welcome to the People Podcast. You are listening to our first pilot episode covering the People's first ever National Assembly in Washington, D.C. I'm Ben Wallen, your state level programming manager, and I'm here with my co-host, Angelica Lee.
Hey, Ben. Glad to be here. And if you are just learning about the People, we are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization working across the country to catalyze and accelerate democracy reform.
That's right. And we actually just got back from Washington, D.C., where we brought 100 representatives from all 50 states. And we got them talking about, are we too polarized to work together anymore?
And it turns out that not only do people want to work together, we know that if we want to get an America that's working for us, we have to. The people have to step up to the plate.
That's right. Well, as we get into this podcast, you're going to hear that a lot of our participants and a lot of the people have a unique perspective because they do come from all across the country, but they all share that burning desire to improve on the state of democracy for all Americans.
So in this first episode, we are going to hear four short stories, one from Jim, a representative from Alaska who has a big background with the environment. We're going to hear from Anthony, a day trader from Texas, Gerard, a new attorney from Orange County, California, and Teresa, a proud mom and wife from Minnesota with a passion for this great country.
Finally, we'll jump into Cassandra as a deep dive, and we'll be able to find a little bit more about her as a veteran, a grandparent, and an employee at the University of Alabama.
So this is our first episode, but you can tune in to all upcoming episodes of the People Podcast and follow along at thepeople.org.
So sign up to get involved and add your voice to the people.
Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the episode.
Ken Lewis, 52 years old.
My name is Gerard Kelly. I'm 26, and I'm from Orange County, California.
Diane Manning, 70.
I am here to change the course of history.
For the people. By the people, and it starts today.
We are here in Washington, D.C. with the People's National Assembly, and I am speaking with Jim Hicks.
That's what they call me.
You know? Welcome, Jim.
It's good to be here. It's a real pleasure. You know?
So can you tell me where you're coming from?
At the moment, I flew in from Michigan, but I'm here representing Alaska.
Okay.
I spent a fair bit of time up there, and that was what was asked of me, so awesome. I'm, you know, more than happy to do so. Do my best, at least.
You know? What's your experience in Alaska?
I'd worked guide work up there, and then conducted, like, pretty significant expedition up there in the last year, and then, but yeah, and it's a place I've spent a lot of time. I was intending to move up there full-time a few years back, but a few things kind of got, you know, tossed around, family obligations, mm-hmm. school, the economy, all that, yeah. You know. That's how it goes, things. Right?
What's your draw to the National Assembly? What brought you here?
I mean, expanding access to democracy is something that I have, and it's been something that has been incredibly important to me since as far back as I can remember having memories, frankly, but the, you know, part of it too is the conversations that I had had in the last year when I was paddling across Alaska and living mostly in the remote territories was, you know, realizing what a significant effect representative democracy can have if it's really representative, if it's truly, if the minimum barrier of representation is kind of taken down, you can see that despite the fact that, you know, because a lot of folks, I think, are, you know, misinterpret that it's not terribly responsive up there to people's needs, and I don't think that's the case. It's, you know, I think it's really a powerful example for ways that the rest of the country can take a really solid look at where maybe it has taken different paths that it, you know,
okay,
could have been more productive.
So you're talking about the representative democracy that you see in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like
there's certainly
some good things going on there. Absolutely. That the nation can learn from.
Definitely.
Okay.
And I've worked in environmental education across the continent for 8 years now, you know, with young folks, you know, and it's been my whole life has been teaching young folks how to, you know, be better stewards of this glorious country of ours. And, you know, I think that has always been just such a huge driving factor. And especially when I was, you know, first approached with this opportunity in particular, you know, I've had a chance to work with a lot of this country's teenagers and over the years and kind of get a chance to see what they think about a lot of things. And they don't necessarily always get a voice, and, you know, seeing the transformation that a lot of folks have made in the last several years, I think It just seems so appealing, you know.
I
love people. I just, you know, I'm always interested in hearing the, you know, very broad spectrum of perspectives that anything in the United States can bring together, you know.
Yeah. And what do you think can come from that, kind of trying to find that common ground when the perspectives are so broad?
You know, there is the part of it that seems rather overwhelming, for sure, you know, when there's not quite the, you know, laser-dialed prerogatives here and there. But I think, I mean, the possibility of it is really quite unlimited, to be totally honest. I think that, especially with this particular kind of, you know, from what I do understand so far, like this kind of forum where having people just actually, you know, come together to work on anything without sort of a heavy duty pretext is in and of itself perhaps a step in the right direction, you know, not jumping in with, you know, some where everything is preset.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a lot of how things tend to be. Like, there's a lot of structure with things lately. It seems like trajectories are difficult to interrupt,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think actually having the opportunity to bring together this, again, this broad of a spectrum of people to actually have some of those more open-ended discussions and really try and, you know, going in with grand expectations of, you know, I think, and by grand expectations, I mean that the possibilities are really quite unlimited, and having that, you know, in mind beforehand, I think it's a really nice thing for people to kind of go ahead with that mentality from the get-go. Like, that the point of this is to be constructive. That,
right.
You know, because so much of what is going on with these conversations now is about agenda setting, is about whatever ulterior motive God knows who has got about God knows what. And that's, you know, not necessarily terribly healthy in a democracy. But I think, I'm very excited. It seems everyone seems so jolly that it's tough to, you know, not have find that at least a little contagious.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's only the first day, so it's just going to more and more. What is your experience in D.C.? You've been here before?
I have. But it's been a long time. I mean, I came as a kid when I was in high school, and, you know, toured all the sites and whatnot. You know, and I've been back and forth visiting friends here, you know, time and again that I went to school with and whatnot. But it's been a few years at least since I was here.
Cool.
You know?
This is going to be a good group of people to explore with.
I think so.
And yeah. I know exploration is kind of your specialty.
I hope so.
Awesome. Well, we are going to be here all weekend, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again and hear how your experience is.
Oh, I can't wait. I very much look forward to it. It'll be wonderful.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
You betcha.
Bye. Okay. So we are here with, we want to introduce yourself. We're at the People's National Assembly, and we're just about to kick off the conference today in D.C.
Hi, I'm Gerard Gully. I'm from Orange County, California.
Awesome. So can you tell us, Gerard, a little bit about what brought you to the National Assembly and kind of what you're hoping to get out of the weekend?
Yeah. So just, you know, going through college and going through life and social media, I see people are just way too divided. They don't talk civilly. And this was a really cool opportunity because it was a sort of national level focus group of people with all different viewpoints coming together. And we're given the opportunity to discuss issues and sort of break out of the echo chambers of, you know, social media, where it's not just people who are my friends and who I agree with, but people who come from all walks of life. And I think that's a really valuable experience. And hopefully we can all contribute to each other's understanding of, you know, the political positions instead of just assuming what everyone else believes based off what the media tells them.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about your life in Orange County?
Yeah, so I'm a criminal prosecutor in Orange County. I just very recently passed the bar and became an attorney.
Oh, congratulations.
So, thank you. So, I talk to little focus groups called juries for my trials a lot. So this is kind of a fun, you know, way to try to see, like, how the average, you know, American thinks about political issues and other things. So, I've got public speaking experience, but I want to get more public listening experience doing this. So.
Awesome. And is there anything specific you're excited about being in D.C. or being at the conference?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a huge U.S. history nerd. So being in D.C., seeing all the monuments and stuff as I drive by them is so cool. I can't wait to take some pictures at some of these monuments here.
That's awesome. Have you been here before?
I've been here before once in undergrad. So I have pictures with the Jefferson Memorial and Lincoln Memorial. But I want to try to get either Washington or some of the random other statues. Like, I saw Daniel Webster earlier.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. You'll have time today to get that done. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And are you from California originally?
Yeah. Orange County, California. California all my life.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for representing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool.
We are here at the People's National Assembly in Washington, D.C., and I am speaking with...
Anthony.
And Anthony, where are you coming from?
I'm coming from Fort Worth, Texas.
Awesome. Have you been to D.C. before?
No, I haven't. It's going to be my first time, cool. So I'm super excited.
Yeah, is there anything you're specifically excited to see in town?
I'm really excited to see the White House.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that and see all the history. So.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. Well, tell us a little bit about what drew you to the People's National Assembly.
Really what drew me to it was, of course, doing Frank Luntz's focus group from there. And I'm really involved in the political scene and, I guess, the news scene, to be honest. I day trade for a living, so I'm always on the news, always going on with who's, you know, saying what congressman is saying what congresswoman is saying this. So it's really involved, and capitalism and the free markets has allowed me to quit my job, focus on schools, and that's really what drew me here to promote for the free markets and capitalism, because I know there's this growing socialism in kids my age, and they don't see, a lot of them are financially illiterate and don't see the advantages that the free market can do.
Yeah. Okay. And so what kind of things do you hope to move forward on?
I just hope to, I really want to just promote the free markets. That's really what I want to promote, because I don't think a lot of people are taking advantage of that in America.
Okay.
And I think that's, I mean, the rich get richer through the markets. That's how it's there,
yeah,
for a reason.
Yeah. And so you are a day trader. Can you tell us what that means for people who don't know?
I sit on a computer basically all day and watch charts. Basically, companies, like I trade Apple, Lululemon. Those are my two main ones. Disney, basically all the major companies. And I've managed to turn like $3,000 into $6,000 in like 2 months. So
okay.
It's really going awesome so far. So awesome. Yes,
you're an entrepreneur.
I guess you could say that.
Yourself? Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. So, do you have a sense of the agenda here this weekend and what you're excited about? Have you seen anything?
I'm super excited just to meet everyone and see how divided we really are, because I don't think the news accurately predicts or detects how divided we are, and I think they try to over exaggerate on how divided we are. And I really think, once we sit down, we're going to realize that we're pretty close together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have an idea of the common values that we share, that, at least from your perspective?
Or? We don't want the government all in our lives. I feel like we can all agree with that. We want to be able to do our own things without having to, you know, be told what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your life like in Fort Worth?
I go to school. I go to TCC, the community college down there. Then I'm transferring into TCU. Really, Monday through Friday, I'm sitting in front of the computer, and then after 2 o'clock, after the market closes, that's when I have classes.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And classes actually just ended, so I just had my finals 2 weeks ago, so
congrats.
It's all done. I know. I'm so excited. Two more years.
Well, we're going to put you to work this weekend.
Yes. I'm excited.
And you have hobbies? What do you do?
I love to fish.
Fish, okay.
Yes, I love to fish all the time.
Cool.
But really, you know, looking at the news and following charts is really my hobby. Yeah.
Cool. Are you a skater?
What was that?
Are you a skater?
No, I'm not.
No? Okay.
No. Yeah, I know the Supreme hat. Yeah, okay. I know. I get that a lot.
I won't put you on a scooter or anything.
Okay, good. Yeah, don't. Not hand-eye coordinated.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Is there anything that you're nervous about this weekend?
Just meeting all the people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Social anxiety.
You do? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a big thing.
Yeah, no, I relate to that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else you want to cover?
I think that's it.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Well, we can catch up with you over the weekend. We'll be recording all weekend. So
sounds good. I'm super excited. Thank you so much.
Thank
for the
you
invitation.
So much. Yeah, appreciate you being here.
Have a good one.
We are here in Washington, D.C. at the People's National Assembly, and I am speaking with
Teresa Edwards.
And Teresa, where are you coming from?
I am coming from Farmington, Minnesota.
Awesome. How was your trip in?
It was good. After they repaired the brakes on our plane with duct tape, it was good.
Okay. All right. Duct tape for the rescue. Awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what drew you to the National Assembly?
I am a wife, a mom of three amazing kids, and an amazing husband. We have grown up with a passion for our country, and we're very patriotic family. Our family mission statement is to maintain integrity and to be the best that we can be while maintaining integrity, and to not compromise who we are. What drew me here is um, I do not like what's going on in our nation right now. There's mm-hmm. just so much infighting between the parties, and we have a president in place, and we may not agree with his personality, but his policies, or his policies, but we need to have a compromise, and we need to get back to the basics of what this country was founded on, mm-hmm. and we need to create a united front, and we need to compromise, and we need to go back to the foundation and remember what really this country is about and what makes it so great and why people want to come here.
Yeah. And so the people in the National Assembly feels like a place you can have that conversation.
I do. It sounds like they have a good group of people of all ages, backgrounds, nationalities, and different views on issues. And I do think that we can come to a place while respecting each other and not bad-mouthing each other and loving on each other to, you know, it goes back to the sayings that we've all heard. If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
Right. Yeah. Are you excited about anything specifically for the weekend, or nervous about anything?
Not so much nervous. I'm very excited at what I have to offer and what I can learn from everybody else.
Yeah, that's awesome. Have you been to D.C. before?
No, I have actually not. My children have been.
Okay.
They've been here for school trips before, and they've loved it. But no, I have not.
Cool. Are you excited to see some of the sites?
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
Pretty it's good agenda. Exciting. I think we're going to go to the National Archives tonight. And
okay.
We'll go to the National Mall, I think, and see the Lincoln Memorial at some point and all the...
It will be incredible.
Iconic stuff, yeah. So this is an important time for America.
Very,
yeah.
Very important.
Can you tell me a little bit about what's going on in Minnesota and your world?
Right now in Minnesota, we are very divided. I am conservative, and our family is conservative, and we are a blue state. And with that, we do actively promote that we are conservative. And every time you do, we're fearful because there is so much backlash. And there's, you know, we can't wear our you know, conservative spirit wear, per se, for fear of being accosted out in public. And that's very sad that we are to this point. We have some... different things going on with new laws that are being passed, and our education system right now with open enrollments. We've got gas taxes coming that they're trying to vote in. So just some bigger issues that really affect families.
Yeah. Do you feel like the people and their model of organizing is going to be effective in Minnesota? Maybe you don't know enough about it yet.
Yeah. No, I
okay.
don't.
Okay. All right. Cool. It's a sneak peek. awesome. So I think I asked you all the questions. Is there anything specific that you are looking forward to for this weekend?
Not anything specific. I'm just very excited to be here because awesome. I do think that this is a convention, or the people, is long overdue. It's gotten to a point that if we don't reel it back now, it's going to be to the point of no return. And that scares me.
Well, we are in the right place.
We are.
Yeah.
So thank you for letting me join in.
Of course. I'm really glad you're here. Excited to get the weekend started.
I am too.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ken Lewis, 52 years old.
My name is Gerard Kelly. I'm 26, and I'm from Orange County, California.
Diane Mannering, 70.
I am here to change the course of history.
For the people, by the people, and it starts today.
All right.
Good. Hi, my name is Cassandra Williamson, and I'm from Alabama.
Great. And we are in Washington, D.C. at the People's National Assembly, and my name is Angelica, and we are here speaking with Cassandra Williamson from yes. Alabama.
Yes.
How are you, Cassandra?
Great, great. I've loved the experience of being here. It's just fantastic. And meeting new people and getting to experience life from their perspective.
Yeah. Can you remind us a little bit what drew you to come to the People's National Assembly?
The opportunity to try to resolve some of the issues around civil discourse. It's become so toxic in the country. And so people can't seem to find middle ground anymore. We just go into our little pockets and our echo chambers and the things that reinforce those kind of things. And we never take the opportunity to listen to someone else. So that's part of what makes our country great, though, is the ability to actually transcend those differences and cross those boundaries and come to some kind of understanding in a you know, republic like this. So, yeah.
Yeah. How has your experience been this weekend?
Oh, it's been, oh, wow. Well, flew in on Friday, and it's been nonstop go since. We've had lots to do all the, at every opportunity, at every hour of the day, it seems like. And so you get up early in the morning, like we did on Saturday and this morning, and you begin your routine of looking at events, talking with people, getting in your groups that have to do with various topics like identity or you know, equal rights and or whatever, anything mm-hmm. like that, all mm-hmm. the issues that we have to deal with in society today and the common good and all this, and then trying to redo, come to an understanding of what we as a group are trying to do in terms of bridging those divides and bringing people together and trying to move the country out of this abyss before it becomes too dangerous. And I mean, but the people here are just so dynamic and so in tune to trying to do something that we all recognize that there is a problem. And so we're really trying to understand each other. And there's so much diversity here. And working to include all that diversity is the challenge, but I think we've done it successfully. And the team that put all this together, it's been phenomenal. So I look forward to doing it again and trying to expand this and to get the states and on board and people to come on board. And it's just a lot, you know. Yeah. It's a beautiful array of all kinds of things, many, many challenges, but I think we have a beautiful product at the end of the day that hopefully everyone can buy onto.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit about the progress you've seen over the weekend? Some of the things that surprised you, maybe?
Well, you know, the willingness for all of us to kind of, we all know the perils of not succeeding at this. That's the driving motivation. And it appears as if the intransigent topics, you know, those issues that have put us into boxes, we've come to realize that maybe we can change the words just slightly and come to understand each other better. And sometimes it's just a matter of understanding the definition of a word in a different context or nuancing the words in a certain way so that they are more inclusive. Because sometimes we pick words out in social media or whatever, we get into our little boxes and we pick words that are deliberately divisive, and then those boxes reinforce that kind of divisiveness, and they just, it's a feedback loop of anger and and separation and all those things. Here we're learning that the one word that one person may use carries different baggage for someone else. And I can give one example. For instance, the word majority was used in the preamble at one time, and it was meant to be something good, mm-hmm. but the baggage for that word is kind of, there's a lot of baggage associated with it in our history, historical baggage, so it really needed to be changed, and then we did. You know, it was just a matter of tweaking words and finding ones that say the same thing but don't carry as much baggage, mm-hmm. trying to find the happy, good thing in the middle.
One of your exercises this weekend was to revise the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
How did that go? Was that a
challenging.
Big undertaking? Yeah.
Yeah.
In 90 minutes.
Yeah, in 90 minutes. But that was challenging because we know that the men who did this didn't do it in 90 minutes for one thing. And it was a very difficult topic for them. And they were very learned people. I mean, these people were very well read. They weren't just your average Joe Schmo somewhere on the street, you know, not saying that that's anything bad, but, you know, they weren't like that. They actually read everything they got their hands on. But then during that period of time in American history, there was a large group of people who were actually very literate and very well read anyway. It wasn't just the elite who did that. It was a lot of people did that then. We need more of that today. You know, people reading and studying and thinking and that kind of thing. But yeah, it dealing with the Declaration of Independence, whew, that's a real challenge. And you're trying to modernize a lot of it too. And people are going, why do you want to do that? Well, those words carry different meaning. And we wanted to make sure that it fits the people of today. And I like to say, and for those who might say object to that, Thomas Jefferson recommended it in one of his letters. He wrote a letter to Samuel Kirchhoff, and I'm pretty sure it was in July of 1816, I think. I think it was 1816. It might have been 1812, but I think it's 1816. But anyway, first thing he did, he told Samuel Kirchhoff, he said, don't tell my friends that I'm telling you this. Because, and why? Because he didn't want to be ostracized from his groups of people he was familiar with in Virginia and stuff like that. It would have really, he didn't want that letter out. But he was one way with one group of people, and then but with Samuel, he kind of opened up a little bit and said some things that are appropriate for us with what we're doing right here and with the people in D.C. So it was like, let me see, and this is me paraphrasing a lot of this letter, but this letter was basically like, one, the people who wrote the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, they're all ordinary people, and they were, for the most part, very ordinary for the day. So he goes, they were people. They had the same foibles, the same kind of stuff that we all deal with. They have their own baggage, you know, and some of them don't like each other. They've got just as much drama. This is me paraphrasing it, you know, bringing it current, but they've got just as much drama as anybody else has got. And that's just who they were. And so he said in the letter that it's with new information, new knowledge, new understanding, we should adapt and change things to consider that. In this letter, he was saying that. And the way he described it was a little analogy. And he said, so what is it of a man, or why should a man be forced in his old age to wear the coat of his youth? And to me, that strikes home, because that's exactly what we're trying to do here, is to fix things, to protect our republic, but at the same time move us forward. We don't want to be stuck. Sometimes you have to change and adapt. And he recommended that in that letter.
Yeah.
And so it's just fascinating.
That is, yeah. America needs a new coat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't wear the same one all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he was saying. But you don't do that frivolously, and you don't do that hastily. And he said it in the letter, too. These are things you don't do on a whim. He even recommended, he said, maybe, and this is him just thinking out of the box a little bit. He says, maybe we should just look at the Constitution and all these things and reconsider them every 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
So, he didn't want that letter out, because he was saying one thing to all of his aristocratic friends down in Virginia, and trying to, after the presidency and all this, you know, he had been president already by then, so he had a certain image that he wanted to uphold, but this is how he really felt on the inside.
Right.
And surprisingly, he was more like Hamilton than he was willing to admit, even though those two fought like cats and dogs. They were the drama queens of the day. George Washington's cabinet, when they were both on the cabinet. Oh, my gosh. Those two were like little kids. And Washington had to rein them in many times and say, stop. Get your act together. Now, Jefferson would write something and hit the papers. He controlled like we don't social media today. Jefferson would write one thing anonymously attacking Hamilton on the other one, and Hamilton would write something anonymously in another paper, and they'd go back and forth with each other, and Washington was just pissed at both of them. And Martha Washington, she wrote in her diaries later that she never spoke to Jefferson for 10 years. because she considered him to be a hypocrite. So yeah, there was drama back then.
Yeah.
Just like today.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so how, looking at your experience at the people, how do you feel like folks have shown up? Has it been able to, they've been able to be authentic and say what they think, or do you feel like there's a different message that they'd give to their friends back home?
I don't know. That's up for them, obviously. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they will do that. I don't know how that will happen after this. This is definitely an aspirational thing that we have here, and it's definitely a guiding light. How bright or dim that is once we leave is up to each person. It really is. I hope that we can carry it forward. But like all things, there will be those who won't, and there will be those who will. That's always the case.
Right.
And you might have somebody writing the Federalist Papers off of these. And the Anti-Federalist.
So looking at yourself going home, what are you planning on doing? What do you feel inspired to carry forward?
All of this.
And maybe you can tell us a little bit about your life in Florida.
In Alabama, yeah.
Or in Alabama, I'm sorry.
No, it's all Alabama. Alabama's fine.
Florida's where we're going to go get some drinks after this.
Oh, that's a long way to go for drinks. No. But no, it's, let me see. Say your question again. What's life like?
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your life in Alabama.
Oh, wow. All right, so I work at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Not for the state, but I'm in food service there. And I work for a really good company. It's called Aramark. They accept me. I haven't said this anywhere in this so far today, but I am also a post-op transgender woman, a veteran, the Navy and the Marine Corps. And I'm very active with the local VA in Tuscaloosa. I try to help vets regardless of their status or identity or whatever, because it's just dear and near to me, because my son is also in the Air Force and son-in-law is in the Army, and yeah, we're all military in the house. So I think we got every branch covered except the Coast Guard in my immediate household. You got the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. So we look like the United Nations of the military in front of my house. if we flew a flag, we don't, but and of course, there would be the trans pride flag out front too. So it's really fascinating. It's a challenge for anyone, really. But it's more so for people like me. And so life is difficult. You will never see me turn back from dealing with something that needs to be dealt with. I'm very out front and open. I could tell you all kinds of stories, from boyfriends on up. So I go to the VA, you know, I've worked for 2 years now with them trying to get things moving in a good direction for, LGBT veterans, because they are very maligned within the VA system right now. And in the community, and many of them don't want anyone to know who they are. They're still hidden. They're still in the closet, for their safety more than anything. Even some who work there, employed there, you know, kind of stay kind of out of the way, because it can be dangerous for people to know. So they take those precautions. And for me, you kind of have to walk with your head on a swivel. You don't want somebody to walk up behind you and knock you down. And right. I've been threatened before, and not once, but several times. And you always have to report that kind of thing, because you don't want anything to happen to me, but I don't want to end up hurting somebody else either. So, yeah, I have a monthly routine. Oh, by the way, if anyone out there is suicidal, anyone thinking about this who is suicidal, if you have any thoughts along those lines, get help. Go get help. There's no stigma in getting help. If you're a veteran needing help, please, 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 please do. The VA will take care of you. They really will. And if you're an LGBT veteran, I know that the suicide rate is higher. It's twice as high as for regular veterans. Get help. The psychologist there will take care of you. I deliberately see a psychologist, team of psychologists, actually, once a month. And it's always the same question. You thought about hurting yourself or hurting anyone else? And no, no. So I'm fortunate in that regard, I think. I'm very comfortable with who I am. And that inspires others to feel that they can actually be real, too.
Yeah.
And even on campus at the University of Alabama, even around town, families who have trans kids or something like that, they'll come and say, we thought we were alone. And I know that because I thought I was alone for 20, 30 years. Thought I was alone. I had no clue there was anybody else like me. I was afraid to even look. Didn't want to get caught looking, you know. And I finally realized that life's more important than the other option. So what we're doing here with the people, I think trying to tie all this back together, we have to find ways to bridge our divides and how we don't, we get in our little groups and we don't even try to understand somebody else. And so I was raised Southern Baptist, and my mom is Southern Baptist, and my mom is the greatest person in the world, not because she doesn't really accept the fact of who I am today, but she still talks with me and still engages with me, and we still communicate, which for a lot of people that doesn't happen. And that's a really narrow, specific example of what's going on in the country. That's like an example of it, because people are, they don't want to talk. They just group off in groups and say, oh, I could use a couple of cuss words from there on out, but I probably won't. That we get in our groups and we don't want to say it. Don't even want to look at the other people. We got to stop that. And that's what this is all about, and bringing people from all ideological backgrounds together, and bringing people from age back. I'm pretty old, I think, but there, you know, so trying to talk across boundaries is something we need to do more of, just to save our country. Because right now, what's going on in the country is pretty dangerous.
Yeah,
very dangerous. We're at that cusp of, in history where we either save it or it's not going to be saved. You know, so we got to do something. And I don't know if that's just me being paranoid because I'm older, but not still, nonetheless, well, I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, you're not the only one who showed up today.
Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people. We have people here from every state.
That's right.
At least two.
Yep, 100 people from across the country here to kind of find some common ground and move America forward.
Yeah, it's not just there's 50 states either, though. You got people representing the territories,
mm-hmm,
from
mm-hmm.
Guam, Puerto Rico. From D.C., obviously, you know, everybody's here together to try to find a solution, to try to find a way to move forward.
Yeah. Has anything surprised you, any opinions that you came in with that you're evolved or changed on based on someone you met here?
No, I'm pretty progressive.
Okay.
I just want to help move the dial forward.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing that I've told other people for 5 years that we've got to do something about. See, I used to do podcasting too for strategic thinking and leadership and stuff like that. And the biggest thing we had was you've got to figure out your narrative, which is what we're doing here. Get your narrative down and then work on it. Work the narrative and be willing to adapt and change when you need to. And to me, this is the fulfillment of something that I have envisioned for years and told many people about, that you have to start thinking bigger. You've got to expand your ability to see in a more holistic way. And by holistic, I mean not in a medicinal way, but holistically in terms of a broad picture, big thinking. You've got to think big, and you've got to do it in a way that brings people with you inspirationally and aspirationally and all these things. You've got to do that, and this is happening here, and I'm so thankful to be a part of something I've wanted for a long time.
That's awesome. I'm really glad that you made it all the way to D.C.
Yeah, me too.
So as we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, is there something that when you think about talking to a young person or maybe a new citizen to America that you would say about the role and responsibility, the power of being a person in this country, a citizen, someone who can make some change?
never doubt the power of your voice. That would be what I would say, regardless of your age. Never doubt that power. Your ideas are valid. I don't care where you are from or who you are or how you identify or even who you love. I don't care. Your ideas to help save and move this country forward and to protect the institutions that make it work well are valid. Speak them. Say them out loud. Don't be afraid of it. Surround yourself with people who think likewise. But at the same time, go out and learn something that you aren't comfortable with, too. Read things that don't fit into your little box. Study all kinds of things. Don't, you know, whatever it is. I mean, if you're ideologically on the left, read a lot of things from the right. If you're ideologically on the right, make sure you're conversing in things on the left. Study everything you can get your hands on. Because what happens is you become a better person, and the country is better off for it. And like I said, I don't care where you were born. I don't care who your parents are. I don't care who you love or anything like that. It doesn't matter to me. The color of your skin, those are all superfluous. It's just, I don't care. You're an American. You're a citizen in this country. You're also a human being. Never forget all of that.
Well, thank you so much. It's really inspiring to talk to you, and I'm excited to hear what goes on in Alabama after you get back home.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you. I love it.
Thanks, Cassandra.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.